It was a moment of pure joy for the Detroit Tigers 50 years ago, beating the St. Louis Cardinals to win the 1968 World Series, the first championship for Detroit since 1945. As the team popped champagne corks in their locker room at Busch Stadium, legendary Tigers broadcaster George Kell spoke with team owner John Fetzer.
I'm sorry to be inflicted on you fellas a second time around, but they just had me in the whirlpool.
I saw him, Kerry.
The whirlpool is almost as good as the champagne. It's very, very good. The boys paid me a great compliment by picking me up and throwing me in, and I appreciate it a lot.
Professor, we've had a lot of them up here tonight, and nearly every one of them said they wanted to win it for you and Jim Campbell. That's quite a compliment.
Well, I tell you, as far as I'm concerned, they're all my boys. I saw them grow up from just kids into men. And there is no greater satisfaction in this world than seeing a man become a man. And that's what our boys did tonight.
You brought them from Tiger Town to Tiger Stadium.
Right.
Good luck to you.
Fetzer owned the Detroit Tigers from 1961 until 1983. He left his mark on Michigan in many other ways, as you're about to hear. And he was deeply spiritual. He spent his life exploring new ways of thinking, new spiritual movements, and expanding his worldview. That story is told by author Brian C. Wilson in his new book, John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. Brian Wilson is a professor of American religious history at Western Michigan University. He recently spoke with Cindy.
So beyond these broad strokes, tell us just who was John Fetzer?
Well, he was many people, actually. Once upon a time, he said that if they ever wrote about him, they would have to call the book The Nine Lives of John Fetzer. And the reason for this is, on the one hand, he was a hard-headed businessman who basically parlayed a small radio station, WKZO here in Kalamazoo, into a kind of regional media empire that included television and cable and music. And he also was the owner of the Detroit Tigers for years. So he made millions in business, and he was a very, very successful businessman. But the reason I'm interested in him as a professor of comparative religion is that he was also on a lifelong spiritual search that took him into all sorts of interesting metaphysical traditions. And over a lifetime, he basically crafted his own spiritual worldview.
So you were certainly drawn to this enough to the point where you felt it was book worthy.
Yes, and the fact that the Fetzer Institute houses a very extensive archive of John Fetzer's papers and letters and other memorabilia. So for me, what I really enjoy doing is reconstructing the way people put together their either religious or spiritual worldviews. My last book was on Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, and it was called Dr. John Harvey Kellogg and the Religion of Biologic Living. And it was also the same situation because he had an extensive documentation. So I could actually see and work through the years as he basically created his worldview and as it evolved. And the same thing with John Fetzer, who also wasn't a professional theologian or anything like that, and yet intensely interested in spiritual topics. And in fact, so interested that near the end of his life, he basically liquidated all his business assets and used the money as an endowment for a foundation to basically promote and preserve his spiritual interests. And that's the Fetzer Institute.
So here we are. We're talking about a man who was born in 1901 and died in 1991. So his life basically spanned the 20th century. So the question is, I know he was, from your book, he was baptized into the local Methodist Episcopal Church. So take us through how he went from being a small-town Midwestern Methodist to what became this lifelong exploration of metaphysical religions and movements.
Yeah, it's a really interesting story because, as you mentioned, he was baptized a Methodist and had a very kind of conventional Christian upbringing. And then when he was a teenager, his mother converted to Seventh-day Adventism. And so he followed his mother into the Seventh-day Adventist Church, which, of course, is an apocalyptic group that has its roots here in Michigan. And he was a committed Seventh-day Adventist for years, and it gave him some really wonderful opportunities in terms of education and learning the radio trade. But in his late 20s, he really found it was kind of spiritually limiting for him. And so he left the church. And at that point, one of the things he did is he headed south to Indiana and went to a place called Camp Chesterfield, which is one of the oldest spiritualist communities, spiritualist camps left in the United States. It's still in business.
And let me stop you there. What does spiritualist mean?
Well, spiritualism is a 19th century tradition that basically believes in the survival of personality after death, and that there are special people called mediums who can basically contact the spirits of the dead, both for comfort but also for enlightenment as well.
Which certainly shows us how that dovetailed into his interest as he went through his life in parapsychology, UFOs, and more, right?
That's correct. Yeah, spiritualism was just the start. Camp Chesterfield had still has a wonderful bookstore, a metaphysical bookstore, that basically deals in all sorts of different traditions. So Fetzer said that every time he went down there, he would come back with an armload of books. And so he started studying things like theosophy and Hermeticism and Rosicrucianism, and he became a Freemason. And then later in life, he got very interested in channeling and such things as A Course in Miracles, which is a famous channeled text, and the Urantia book, another channeled text.
And, you know, as you list some of those, they're terms, Freemasonry, theosophy, a lot of us have heard them. Maybe we don't know what they mean. So where did that take him? What were the beliefs of these types of systems?
Well, probably theosophy was the most influential, and that's another 19th century new religious movement from the United States that basically tried to combine Western esotericism with Hinduism and Buddhism. So out of this, for example, he got a very strong belief in reincarnation and the power of karma. And for the rest of his life, he was fascinated with past life experiences and the whole idea of reincarnation. So that was just one of many of metaphysical ideas. And of course, metaphysical just simply refers to a group of traditions that see the universe as is just one thing, as monistic and wholly made up of spirit, circulating spirit.
As he spent this life of his on this spiritual quest with this spiritual restlessness, and he was really looking to expand his understanding of the spiritual life and his worldview, how was that reflected in the way he did business?
Well, it's interesting because he was very good at compartmentalizing his business from his spiritual quest.
So you're saying he could be a very hard-nosed businessman. It didn't make him soft and mushy.
No. I think he was always a very fair person and a good person to his employees. But he also didn't impose his spiritual beliefs on his businesses. And part of this was practical because I think he was concerned that in Southwest Michigan, which tends to be pretty conservative religiously, that if people knew he was studying all this metaphysical stuff, he'd lose audience members and advertisers. So he was very cautious about it. And it's interesting because a lot of his longtime colleagues in his businesses knew he was interested in this, but had no idea just how far it went.
And how did this quest of John Fetzer's match or track with the quest many people were on through the 20th century? I mean, just thinking of his lifespan.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the interesting things I found in doing this book is that metaphysical thinking was prominent in the Midwest throughout the 20th century. So John Fetzer really didn't have to go too far. In fact, it all started just a day's drive south of us in Camp Chesterfield. So there were many Americans who, during this period, were also looking for kind of spiritual alternatives to the traditions they had been born into. And so one of the things the book tries to do is kind of chart the rise of this kind of metaphysical thinking through the 20th century and show how John Fetzer was really part of a larger kind of movement that eventually culminated in the New Age. And I think that the thing is, he identified himself as a New Ager as early as the 1960s. And the term only really became popular in the United States in the 1980s and 90s. And now most people who are into metaphysical things would hate to be labeled a New Ager simply because it kind of denotes a very kind of hyper-individualistic and narcissistic spirituality. And that definitely was not what John Fetzer was looking for.
And the Fetzer Institute that he founded continues to this day. What does it do in Michigan? What has its effect been?
Well, the Fetzer Institute is basically designed to promote spirituality in various forms. The key here is he always thought that individual spiritual transformation was important, not simply in and of itself, but that if you got enough people who were spiritually transformed, it would ultimately catalyze the spiritual transformation of the world. And so the Fetzer Institute is really, I mean, one of its goals is through individual spiritual transformation to basically promote this, hopefully catalyze this global spiritual transformation. And it does this, it's an operating foundation. So it basically underwrites research and a variety of different programs to that end. And so, for example, today, the Institute is funding programs that basically promote spirituality of all kinds throughout the life cycle, from childhood to old age. And another recent project is very interesting. It's basically looking at the spiritual roots of democracy. Many at the Institute are concerned about where the country is today politically and just how divided it is. And so the idea is for people of a variety of different political stripes to come together and think about the values and kind of spiritual foundation of democracy as a way of getting people to talk to each other instead of shouting at each other.
And actually, I wanted to ask you, since you have, in researching your book, John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age, Brian Wilson, you've been living inside this man's head and inside his heart. What do you think John Fetzer would make of the business and political and spiritual climate of our country in 2018?
Well, on the one hand, I think he'd be immensely excited about the advances in technology, because he started back when radio was just a primitive, very primitive kind of technology. So I think he would be absolutely fascinated by computers and the internet and things like that. But on the other hand, I think he'd be very concerned about kind of the spiritual climate, the kind of tensions and divisions in the country today. And so I think he was always very optimistic. So I think he would think wherever we are, we can always work through these problems. But for him, it always began with a recognition of kind of the spiritual basis of things.
Brian Wilson is a professor of American religious history in the Department of Comparative Religion at Western Michigan University. His new book is John E. Fetzer and the Quest for the New Age. Brian C. Wilson, pleasure talking with you. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Wilson has book events coming up in both Kalamazoo and Petoskey. You can find a link with more information at michiganradio.org.